From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. We have a busy night ahead of us. You've all heard of the breaking news and the Natalie Holloway case. Well, I sat down with Jossie Manser early this afternoon. It was posted on Scared Monkeys right away. Is that jawbone that was found that of Natalie Holloway? We'll find out real soon. My first guest tonight, Wendy Murphy. You know her as a former prosecutor, author, victims advocate, law professor, you name it. Wendy speaks her mind, and she's going to talk about Amazon and them posting that how-to book for child pedophiles, for child predators. Can you believe that in today's society? The free speech run amok? Let's see what Wendy had to say. Okay, Wendy Murphy, you all know, is a favorite guest here on the program. She's a former prosecutor and law professor at New England Law Boston. She's a former visiting scholar at the Harvard Law School. She also specializes in the representation of crime victims. And, of course, is the author of the well-done book, And Justice for Some. And if you look in the show notes, you'll see a link to her recent article on Fox News called The Truth About Amazon, Kids, and Free Speech. And it's an article you should all read. Wendy, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you again, Dana.
Everybody claims free speech, whether it's some lunatic organization, NAMBLA, you name it. But Amazon has gone too far here. Tell us about it.
Well, if there is a thing you can do to go too far as free speech goes, this would be it. Putting together a manual that does anything to incite people to molest and rape children seems to me exactly what the First Amendment was designed not to protect. In other words, you know, the First Amendment's very precious, important that we have free speech rights, particularly important in terms of dissenting views around politics and the government. And, you know, that really was at the heart of why we founded this country the way we did, with the First Amendment at the top of the list for a reason. We want a healthy democracy that requires dissenting voices to have a seat at the table, and a loud one. You know, that's how you resolve differences. It's how you promote the evolution of ideas. What we've always appreciated as not quite intended to be covered by free speech principles is that which causes serious harm to others. In other words, Dana, and we all know these examples, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. Why? Because people will be trampled. And right. Trampling people is worse than stopping people from yelling fire,
mm-hmm.
Falsely, certainly. And, you know, there are all kinds of other exceptions. You can't incite violence. You can't walk into the middle of downtown anywhere and say, you know, everybody rise up, get your machine guns, and go kill all the Muslims, for example. You know, there are so many exceptions, libel and slander and threats. You know, we have a whole body of law that criminalizes things called threats. So you can't really have free speech in the so-called absolute style that a lot of folks might think we do have if we can regulate things like threats and incitement. So with that as a backdrop, let's talk about a book that incites people to molest, rape, violate, and cause serious physical and emotional harm to children through violence. That's what this book does. And, you know, everyone's heard about it. Amazon sold a book that was really, in so many words, a how-to book for people who want to not only express themselves sexually toward children, but also avoid getting caught, avoid getting in trouble with the cops. And it does a lot to legitimize the feelings that perpetrators might have about kids, which is fine. That's actually probably protected speech, saying to someone, oh, you know, you're a strange duck. You've got perverse ideas. You're a good person. That's protected speech. That's not what this book does, although I'm sure it does it in part. The objectionable parts of the book are literally the how-to stuff about here's a way to express yourself by imposing yourself sexually on a child, but not going over the line. And, for example, the book talks about being sexually aggressive toward a child in a way that involves touching and kissing, but not necessarily rape. Well, you know, I got news for anybody who thinks that that's good guidance if you are planning on assaulting a child, because even a kiss, just a kiss or a touch to the rear end, is not only a crime, but it's a felony. So the book is giving incitement slash advice, which I think is not covered by the First Amendment at all, because it provokes violence against our most vulnerable citizens. But it's also wrong. It's legally incorrect advice to say you can kiss a child if you're an adult and not get in trouble. Indeed, you can be in serious trouble, prosecuted, in fact, for the felony crime of indecent assault on a child. So lots to talk about, Dana, but that's some of the basics.
Absolutely. Wendy Murphy's here. We're talking about her article, The Truth About Amazon Kids and Free Speech. Now, this publication, The Pedophile's Guide to Love and Pleasure, A Child Lover's Code of Conduct, it just makes you sick even mentioning it. But you made a good point, and I go back to, the famous Whoopi Goldberg comment, well, it isn't rape, and how stupid that was and how you took that to task. People just don't understand, Wendy, I don't think, when it comes to things like this. Let's talk about Amazon, you know, the book itself and how it doesn't fall into free speech. But what about the ethical aspect of Amazon actually selling this garbage for the author?
Well, you know, I'm not an ethicist, and I think reasonable people have done a terrific job arguing that even if it is free speech, Amazon should be ashamed of itself. It's mm-hmm. unethical. It's immoral. And they've said, even if it is protected speech, my choice as a consumer is to choose not to buy things through Amazon, and that's the way I'm going to express myself economically. The problem with that, Dana, is that lots of other people who are more perverted and don't care about ethics and morals bought the book mm-hmm. and, you know, made it clear to Amazon that despite how some people feel, they think it's just a dandy thing to sell. And if you ask a company like Amazon to put the interest of children above profits, clearly their reaction is no thanks. We like profits better. And, I wish I could say there's something we can do about that, but you can't. You can't regulate exceedingly bad, indeed, disgusting corporate behavior. All you can do is try to teach people to impose ethical standards on companies by not using their services or purchasing their goods. This country, you know, has too many weirdos in it to expect that to affect Amazon's bottom line. And that's why I think, in particular, in a case where we're talking about kids who have no rights, much less the authority to use their speech to fight speech. I mean, we have to keep that in mind, too. When you're talking about kids, you have to abandon the ordinary principles of bad speech should produce bad speech, and that somehow you'll produce light in all the heat. For kids who have no really robust constitutional freedoms the way adults do, I think we owe it to them to bend the rules, and we do bend the rules a lot. Let me give you an example. Certainly pornography involving adults is protected in this country as an expression of speech and art and so forth, and yet the United States Supreme Court has held repeatedly that the same exact images as applied to children is not even speech at all. It's not that there's an exception. Mm-hmm. It just isn't speech. Images of children involved in sexual activity with adults are just not protected speech, period. So we've got that big exception already in the First Amendment. Why? Because we're talking about kids. So I think we have to stop saying, oh, let's make it a moral discussion. Let's talk about the ethics of Amazon. We'll bang our heads into walls for centuries before that makes a difference. I think what we really have to do is demand from our legal system that they give enough of a damn about kids that they see fit to create yet another important exception to the First Amendment, as they did with child pornography, and say they're not going to protect the sort of stuff that incites targeted violence against defenseless children. And there's good precedents for this, and I hope folks will check out my column at foxnews.com to read a little bit more. But I'll give you just the upshot, Dana. There's a case out of the Fourth Circuit. The United States Supreme Court, by the way, allowed the decision to stand. So that's, in a sense, saying the Supreme Court has put its imprimatur on the ruling. But it was all about whether the state can regulate, in other words, the state can inhibit speech in a book that was a how-to manual for hitmen. The federal court, all the way up to the Fourth Circuit, said it's not protected speech. That if you create a book about you know, a guidebook for how to be a hitman and kill people, you can be prosecuted for aiding and abetting murder. And there was a successful prosecution. The defendant challenged it on free speech grounds, and he lost. And it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, we don't want to protect that stuff. That's not speech. That's incitement to violence. If we can forbid the publication of those kinds of books, then, of course, we can forbid the publication of how-to guidebooks for people who rape children, because, again, guidebooks for hitmen, you're talking about adults, guidebooks about raping children, you're talking about kids, I think they get a thumb on the scale.
Wendy Murphy's here. We're talking about her article, The Truth About Amazon, Kids and Free Speech, and there's a link in the show notes how to get the Fox News article. Let's expand it a little further, Wendy, for a minute or two, and talk about regulating the Internet. We've all heard about, you know, Craigslist and the social networking problems that are out there, and, of course, the Internet can be a cesspool of pedophiles and all sorts of garbage out there. Those same free speech people will come forward and say that the Internet should never be regulated. I'm different than that. I think the Internet should be regulated when it comes to that kind of garbage. Your thoughts?
Well, look, the Internet is absolutely going to be heavily regulated eventually, because yeah, it has become, in a sense, the real world for so many people, especially young people. It's only a matter of time. The reason it isn't yet heavily regulated is that it isn't making enough money yet. And it's making plenty, don't get me wrong, but when it reaches the stage where lots of real-world activities start only occur online, including, for the most part, shopping, and where huge amounts of money are spent, once that becomes commonplace on the Internet, the desire to regulate will you know, trump anybody's objection on free speech grounds. And that's because money has always driven incentives around regulatory decision-making, and so I think that's inevitable. But between now and then, we've got a bit of a wild, wild west attitude about it, and I think it's partly because there's kind of a grand design to let it all fester and see where it lands before we figure out how to regulate and what to regulate and so forth. All that said, you know, the rules are what they are. In the real world or on the Internet, if you engage in threats, you're in trouble. Yeah. In the real world or on the Internet, if you incite violence, you're in trouble. People may think it's a special space, and to some extent it does provide better protection against state oversight because it's harder to police the Internet. But believe me, especially these days, law enforcement has all the tools it needs to figure out who you are, what you said, when you said it. You know, anyone who thinks they can get away with incitement to violence on the Internet is just wrong, and they're going to have to learn the hard way. I will say this. Congress could help. You know, they've given ISPs and entities like Amazon, in my opinion, too much immunity from liability for facilitating the harmful behavior. And I think that was wrong-headed. I understand it was probably a business-oriented decision that, you know, people with money lobbied Congress not to expose the ISPs to liability for the acts of third parties, just because you know, it helps them to grow businesses and make more profits if they're not subjected to liability. But I think it's time for Congress to step up and hold the ISPs accountable, primarily because they have a lot of authority to stop the bad behavior. Right now, what we do is we kind of hope that the service providers do what they promise. Oh, we have standards here. We've got really good standards, and we've got terms of use, and we're going to really hammer down on you if you don't behave well. Yeah, you know, that a lot of good that did with the sale of this child rape book.
Yeah.
I think we need stronger enforcement mechanisms. I think relying on ISPs to police themselves as against the desire to make money is silly. And so I hope Congress will step up, because although you can file a lawsuit against someone who does make a threat, it's so much harder to find them, and they are often penniless. You know, some bum with no money incites violence against children, and, you know, all the perpetrators around the nation kind of become incited and start to hunt for kids. You can sue predators all day long. You rub them all together, they've got a dollar. So a lawsuit against them is worth nothing. You file one lawsuit against Amazon for the value of a child's life or well-being, and you know, you've made a difference industry-wide. So I think really Congress has to step up and give some liability exposure to make companies like Amazon have a stronger incentive to protect kids and other vulnerable parties from the exceedingly bad and growing increasingly bad behavior on the internet.
Absolutely. Wendy Murphy's here. Let's go quickly, just for a few minutes, from protecting children from predators and sexual deviance to protecting children from their parents, their step-parents
yeah.
in some cases. I want to get your thoughts on the poor little Australian girl, the Baker case. It's turned to now it looks like she has been or her remains have been discovered. And where would you go with this investigation now if you were the prosecutor?
Well, I'll say this, the poor child, I think so far law enforcement has gotten it exactly right,
yeah.
and let's contrast what they've done in this case with what law enforcement did wrong in the Ramsey case many years ago with little JonBenet. When crime happens in the home, and really only two people know what happened in terms of the adults, and they stick together like glue, it's a very hard case to prosecute and to investigate, because even if it was the mother, if the father sticks up for her, or vice versa, you're going to get reasonable doubt at the end of the day, because they have what's called the cross-finger-pointing problem in those cases. Each parent blames the other one. The jury can't figure out which version is actually true, and it's sort of built-in reasonable doubt in both directions. So the most important thing in any case where parents are implicated, like this case, police have to do exactly what they did here. Divide and conquer. Divide and separate. Get them away from each other. Make deals with the one you think is the least likely to have done the most harm. And, so far it looks like the stepmother is the one who's starting to roll over a bit, and that's good. She's,
yeah.
We know that the child's stepmother has provided reliable information about where some of the evidence has been found, the prosthetic leg and the mattress. So far she's worked out as expected, as one would hope. The question is she ultimately going to give up the whole story? Because so far, I think we're still a little frustrated that the stepmother does seem to know what happened but hasn't quite told the whole story. Perhaps she's just playing her cards with law enforcement and she's trying to make a deal. That's probably what's going on behind the scenes. She's got her lawyers saying, we told you where, the mattress was and where the prosthetic leg was and the, dismembered body parts, just to show you that we do have good, solid evidence that
mm-hmm.
can help you solve this case. But we want a good deal before we tell you more about exactly what happened. I don't like making deals with bad guys like that. But sometimes you got to do it. You got to do it just to find justice for the child. And, that's likely to be the end game here. It does seem as though they don't quite have the comfort level yet because they haven't charged anybody with homicide. But you can tell they're moving in that direction. And the fact that the stepmother has already given up as much as she has suggests to me that it's just a matter of time before she tells the whole story. Now, what is the whole story, Dana? That's, I guess the $64,000 question. There was something particularly grotesque going on behind closed doors, there's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it was as simple as the child was needy, the child had medical concerns, so they decided to just do away with her. I suspect we're going to hear that it was a whole lot more horrifying than that.
Yeah, you hate to say it. I know it has come up in the media that some illusions of a sympathy killing, but no way, not in this case. I don't believe that. Wendy, as always, thank you.
My pleasure, Dana. Bye-bye.
We'll talk soon. Bye-bye. That's Wendy Murphy, former prosecutor and author and victims advocate, and I don't believe this Baker case was a sympathy killing in any means. We do have some breaking news coming forward on the Natalie Holloway case. You know that there was a jawbone found on the beach in Aruba. I'm going to air a interview I did with Jossie Manser here a little while ago to update you all on that here very shortly. I'm Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. And we are right back. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Wendy. Her and I talked off air about Natalie Holloway, and we'll have Wendy back on again real soon to comment on any developments that happen. Now, we all know, anyone that's followed this case for the last 5 years, that there have been discoveries before. I use the term false hope. Because these discoveries have turned out to be nothing more than nothing. And the family has had its hopes up and has had its hopes taken away from it. This case may be a little bit different now. As we know, there was some tourists from Massachusetts, I believe, that discovered what the media and what law enforcement is saying, a piece of a jaw. And there may be a tooth or two on that. And I thought I would sit down with Jossie Manzer, and I did that earlier on today. We posted it right away up on Scared Monkeys to see what he had to say and what he had heard about this discovery. Is it Natalie? Will Natalie finally be able to go home? Now, we have to understand that after 5 years, there will be Natalie's remains, but something of Natalie should be able to go back to Alabama and be rightfully buried where it belongs. So here's what Jossie had to say. Okay, you've all heard about the breaking news out of Aruba. Again, we've heard stories like this in the past. There has been a what is described in the media as a jawbone discovered, and the media has jumped all over it, tying it into the disappearance of Natalie Holloway. I thought I'd go right to Aruba to Jossie Manzer, the managing editor of Diario, and see what he has to say. Hi, Jossie.
Hi, Nina.
Nice to have you on the program. Can you tell us what's happening? A jawbone has discovered. What have you heard?
Well, what we heard is that Friday a couple of American tourists were walking on the beach, and they found a jawbone with one tooth or more on it. They immediately reported it to the police. The police investigated. They kept the things pretty quiet. The jawbone was found near the Phoenix Hotel. That's in the area where Natalie Holloway disappeared, where we believe from the beginning that Joran dumped her body into the ocean, from there straight to the west. And that on Sunday, two police officers from Aruba took the jawbone or went to Holland. They sent it or they went with it, but they are in Holland now waiting for the results. We heard from official sources that it is believed that the jawbone is human and that it does belong to a young white person.
Okay.
So all this ties in to all this, these speculations that have arisen, that it may belong to Natalie Holloway. It may very well be so, but we don't know yet.
When we look at the analysis, and you've just mentioned that it may belong to a young white person, the next step obviously would be DNA analysis. Now, will that be done also in the Netherlands, and have they given a timeline for that?
Definitely. I don't know what the timeline is, but I believe it takes a few days for them to do it. I believe that's the main reason why they took it to Holland, because they do have the capability. If the jawbone still has any marrow or whatever in it, that they will be able to determine from any kind of DNA that they can extract, they can determine a relationship to any person, so in this case to Natalie Holloway, if that were the case.
Okay, well, it should be interesting to see what happens. Just quickly, Jossie, we all know Joran Vandersloot has been in a Peruvian jail for some time now. The Kelpo brothers, have we heard much from them lately?
No, you know, they've been as quiet as mouses. I mean, we haven't heard a peep from them in many years.
Yeah, they have been
They're invisible here.
Yeah, they've been flying under the radar for sure. Well, I'm sure Diario and yourself will be keeping track of the story, and let's hope for the sake of the Holloway family that Natalie's or some of her remains have been discovered.
Well, we hope so too.
Thank you, Jossie.
You're quite welcome.
Take care. Bye bye.
Okay. Bye bye.
That's Jossie Manzer from the Diario newspaper. And we all know when we followed this story as many times as we have had discoveries like this made in the past that have turned out to be false hope for the family. Let's hope that maybe this has turned out to be something, because definitely Natalie does deserve to be taken home or a part of her to Alabama and have her laid to rest. Will the case ever be solved? We'll have to wait and see. I'm Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Rumors are my next guest is scheduled to be on the next Dancing with the Stars. Her and they're going to bring David Hasselhoff back. I don't know, is there any truth to that?
I love the Hoff.
Do you?
I'm a Hoff lover.
Especially when he's eating his cheeseburger?
This is probably not for this time slot, but have you seen his roast?
No, I have. Actually, I have. And
were you aware aware that a gentleman that was a performer there OD'd a month later?
Has passed on. Yeah, I know.
That's very, very sad.
That was
so
pretty sad.
As much as we like the Hoff, I think there's probably, it's, you know, good fun at his expense, but yikes.
Yeah, exactly. For those of you that do not recognize the voice on the other end of the telephone, it's Blink from Blink on Crime. Our sister blog, and just go to blinkoncrime.com for all your crime needs. Sounds like we're selling something here. I want to get your thoughts, first of all, on Holloway. We've got a jawbone, and we've got some news. Now, we've had a lot of, I used the term false hope in the past 5 years. What do you think? Do you think this one's going to turn out?
You know, you're going to probably be very surprised to hear me say this. I think it's her.
Yeah.
I do. I think that, and I guess I should caveat that by saying, as strong as my sources generally are in cases, I'm not relying on any of that.
Right.
I simply feel, from a 30,000-foot perspective, that taking the emotion out of the equation, I think Aruba is pretty much done with this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are significant things that are coming up in both of the extortion case against Jorn Vandersloot and the murder case. From the Peruvian the murder that I think they want to disassociate themselves with. So I do believe that if this is Natalie, this will be handled correctly.
Mm-hmm. And I do too.
Sorry?
I do too, sorry.
When you say you do too, do you mean you agree with me that it's kind of like a timing and a...
I don't know about that.
...relations issue too?
I don't know about that, but I think this... incident, this discovery, whatever you want to call it, will be handled correctly. There's been so much false hope and so many tests being done, and I don't know if you got. Yeah, I did. I sent you the clip. But when Jossie was on earlier, we posted it up right away. He said that he didn't know of a timeline for DNA. When he's on Nancy Grace tonight, he said maybe tomorrow. I'm not sure if we can get a DNA test that quick. In some cases, in emergencies, sure, they'll do that. I'm hoping it's her. I'm really hoping it's her. But with Aruba, I think we've learned long ago to, expect the unexpected. And then when that comes forward, it's just a huge disappointment. But, gosh, I hope it's her.
And I totally agree with you. And colleagues of mine, and you're one of them, and certainly Red and Clasend at Scared Monkeys, have followed this case religiously in such a devoted way for so long. And you're right. It has been such a, for lack of a better word, roller coaster, that it would seem that such a finding is kind of nonplussed or, anticlimactic in a way.
Yeah.
To what we've all been searching for so diligently for so long, but I think there's a certain grace to it. So call me a romantic and such a proponent of, what Beth has been subjected to, mm-hmm. the last, one of the last interviews we had. And it's time. I mean, a disarticulated mandible in the way that it was found, where it was found.
Yeah.
Sounds right to me.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
They've already been able to designate. I want to say that Mr. Mensur said it was from a Caucasian individual with an appropriate age group.
Yep.
And I want to also say that I was told from a source that there was at least one molar intact, and I don't know how much you know about matching dental records.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, depending upon an individual's x-rays, it is possible to make an identification from that.
Sure. No, I understand. I understand, yeah.
So, and I hope that they don't go that route. I agree. I hope that they go for a full DNA profile. And Natalie's DNA is available for testing, so that helps.
Well,
they'll have an automatic profile that they'll be able to compare it to relatively quickly. And again, they're one of the best labs in the world. I mean, you have the Casey Anthony case where Jose Baez is fighting to have something taken there. So, there's somewhat of a reputable nature to what they're doing. So, I'm hopeful. It would be a blow for it to be wrong again.
Mm-hmm.
I
hope it isn't.
No, I hope so too. You know, but then when you look at the case itself, and I know there was some talk on Nancy's show tonight about indictments and all that, and charges have been brought forward with less evidence. Sure, we've gone over that and over that and over that and over that, mm-hmm. but we're talking about the Aruban justice system, though. This idiot has confessed so many times. I still say that the main confession was the one in the vehicle, the hidden camera.
Sure.
One.
Peter DeVries, yes.
Yeah, but bringing her home, I think, is the most important thing right now, in my opinion. Justice, yeah, that will get served. It gets served several different ways. And Mr. Vandersloot will get his justice, I'm sure, some way, somehow. But I want to ask you before we get on to the other reason I have you on the show tonight. When you look at this case, Blink, in the last 5 years, and the possibility that this case will blow wide open again, because if this is her, the networks will be all over this like a bird on a bug, and they'll be rehashing stuff over and over and over again, and it will be that same conundrum, don't ask me to spell that, where we will have this case, and it deserves as much coverage as it can get. Believe me, I understand that. But it will take over, and a lot of other cases won't be heard, and I'm going to get in some trouble for saying this. Is it going to be right to go nonstop on this if this is Natalie for the next 6 months or whatever?
No. On its merit, I agree with you wholeheartedly, and my support goes to bringing Natalie home,
yeah.
and allowing the grief process and the memoriam process to take place with the people that have loved her and have fought so hard to bring her home. I'm a proponent of recovery in the first place for the obvious reasons, of course. But in the event that that particular item is Natalie's and is the only, article that's found, honestly, it doesn't tie Jurgen Vandersloot to anything.
No.
And so if you look at it just from the perspective of prosecution, which is in order at this point, I mean, is he going to get out of jail in Peru? No.
No.
I mean, he's got a federal indictment in the States pending after that, which is nothing, he'd be an international felony, convicted person, when he saw that. The reality is he's not getting out of prison. And that's not going to bring Natalie back.
Right.
But I do believe that her family deserves that peace of mind. Do I think that, the press should be rehashing, as you put it, every, event and storyline? And, a Aruban justice malfeasance, if you will. No, I don't. I think that what we need to do as a society is to focus on the cases that we can affect, because everybody deserves to recover a loved one, and everybody equally, and everybody deserves justice, in my opinion.
I agree. And, poor Julia, she's, I'm sure, clearing her calendar right now for all of the interviews that she's hoping that she'll get, but I hope her phone doesn't ring. One more question, and I just thought of this, and it's been ticking me off a little bit lately. A few weeks back, a month back, but whatever it was, when Beth Holloway and Peter DeVries went to Peru, and some of these so-called media pinheads came forward, and stories came out that she'd snuck a camera into the prison, and she snuck into the prison, and she was arrested, and all this garbage that came out, including on Nancy Grace's show. Did you have a chance to actually see some of the video? I saw it on, I think it was Entertainment Tonight. And I'll tell you what, every organization or every so-called wannabe organization that criticized Beth Holloway for what she did over there without knowing the facts should be ashamed of themselves. I saw that video. That she didn't sneak in there. They didn't sneak a hidden camera in there. This was something that was arranged. It was obvious. There was a ploy behind it, obviously. But shame on these so-called media pinheads that brought that story up and tried to make that woman look like she was obstructing an investigation, or she was causing problems, or she was doing it for her own benefit. Shame on them. Did you get a chance to see that?
I did, Dana, and it didn't change anything for me because you and I were in complete agreement that it was out of line in the first place. I feel strongly that as the mother of a presumed murdered young woman who has, you know, justice has been elusive, as has her recovery, she did nothing wrong.
No.
In my mind, I understand that Mr. DeVries has somewhat of a reputation because of his, you know, undercover work, what I'll call surreptitious undercover work. But, you know, and I don't advocate anybody going outside the boundaries of law, but she didn't. She did not.
No.
She didn't break a law. She didn't attempt to break a law. There was nothing conniving. I didn't then, and I don't blame her. What I blame is media types that didn't apologize.
No.
And didn't say, you know what, we were wrong. I continue in this work for, you know, going into my second year, really, in having a site, investigating personally investigating cases. I continue to be astounded how media is more invested in being right than they are in the truth.
That's so true. Blink from Blink on Crime is here, and our Cohort Red says, he sent me a quick note, he says, we had scared monkeys like Dana and Blink can walk and chew gum at the same time.
I haven't talked to Red today. He was on, sadly, you know, for whatever this is worth, he was on my BlackBerry at about 5:30 a.m. this morning.
Oh, Lord. Yeah.
Because I hadn't seen yet that the coverage of the finding for Natalie. And I clicked onto another button, and he had already had it up.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
So I was impressed by that, and I also was not surprised that we didn't touch base earlier this morning as a result.
He's a busy guy, but Blink from Blink on Crime is here. BlinkOnCrime.com is her website. Horman, you know, I was talking to Wendy Murphy earlier today about the Baker case and how we can protect, you know, we were talking about, well, Amazon, first of all, and that child predator, How to Be a Pedophile book. And I used the line, okay, Wendy, now we've learned how to protect our kids from child predators. How do we protect our kids from their parents? And she kind of giggled at that a little bit, but it's so true. And the Horman case is another one. You've got some updates on Blink. What's going on?
Well, recently, within the last 2 days, some emails have been released. They are allegedly emails between, there's emails that are from to an undisclosed party, and there is an email from an extended family member where Terry Horman, Kyron's stepmother, is allegedly, in the words of Kyron's mother, Desiree Young, show extreme hatred towards Kyron. We haven't seen what those emails indicate, but both she and Kyron's father, Kane Horman, were shown those emails last Friday. And in her opinion, as a result of having seen them, she feels strongly that she certainly, based on those emails, would be capable of physically harming Kyron. And again, I haven't seen the emails in question, but I have to feel that for her to outline and characterize them the way that she did, they were particularly damning. What's interesting to me is, well, a couple of things. She specifically stated in an interview that she gave on the Today Show, following her press conference, saying, you know, talking about them, that she and Terry Horman, Kyron's stepmother, agreed that at one point last year that Kyron was, in essence, struggling, and that Kyron wanted to go live with his mother, Desiree Young.
Right.
Terry Horman was in support of that. And Desiree approached the subject with Kane Horman, and he was not open to the option.
When we look at these stories, and in this case, the Horman case, and if you're just tuning in, Blink from Blink on Crime is here. We're getting an update on the Horman case. Go to her webpage at blinkoncrime.com. we look at these cases, not only this one, but so many others, and they, what's the word I'm looking for here? The technological aspect of them, whether it's Anthony with the emails and the Google searches, or this case with now emails and texts and all this sort of stuff, isn't it something that we don't, or we're not able to clear cases quicker because of all this electronic forensic evidence? I know you need more than that because you can't prove who's actually sitting behind the computer screen, but there's a huge amount. Holloway, you name it, every one of them has something on the internet or something through telecommunications that either implicates the person that's done it or points towards the right person.
Without a doubt, Dana, and you touched on such an important subject, and in cases we're going to talk about in a minute, that those developments are huge. It's huge in this case, in that we talked earlier about, well, actually not in this conversation, but earlier in the case a couple of weeks ago, I had brought on a legal analyst, a practicing attorney out of Washington, to go over recent filings in the case about text messages. That the numbers didn't match the numbers that were on file, which were confirmed by blinkoncrime.com, for the alleged recipient. And I happen to know as a fact that this individual had his phone, what we'll call, flashed. You know, there is so much technology out there, and the problem with what you're, you know, the point that you're making is that it's not what I'll call direct evidence.
Right.
Because it's manipulatable. Because it's subject to technology. While it, in and of itself, if you were in a position where you could say unequivocally, it's this individual with this electronic footprint is responsible for this email, but because it's not direct evidence, as compelling as it is, and it does tell the story and it does direct investigations, absolutely. But as a standalone, it's just not there yet. Now, in the absence of information, it's almost more compelling. You know, we take Casey Anthony's case with the unallocated factions of her computers and things along those lines, things that somebody deliberately hid. I mean, there's an inflammatory content from an evidentiary perspective that works. But you're right. Technologically, there's so much to be gleaned, and it tells a story, but it doesn't. It can point a finger all day long, but without direct evidence and corroboration of that direct evidence, it's not going to convict anyone.
Blink from Blink on Crime is here, and if you check out our webpage, you'll see that there's going to be an upcoming investigative series involving Chris George and the Tracy Ocasio case. Let's talk about George first. What's coming up?
Oh, well, Chris George went missing about February 11th in 2009.
Right.
And not really much has happened in his case in quite a long period of time until recently. Tracy George went missing on May 27th in 2009, not far away. But what's particularly compelling about these cases is they have several common denominators and or individuals, I will say. It started out with Jimmy Hathaway, who is named a suspect in Tracy Ocasio's case. He was one of the last people to be with Chris George, and his colleague, a guy by the name of Tyler Waters, definitely was, who is currently on bond and facing trafficking charges for drugs. One of the amazing things about cases like this, that we study and we investigate, is ultimately, you know, when you got, you know, kind of a crew of characters, if you will, in the process, there's going to be more arrests, and witnesses are going to be developed, and witnesses are going to come forward. And thankfully, we've been able to develop some new sources and some new investigative witnesses that tell a very compelling story. I think at the end of this, we have some real information as to the potential whereabouts of these subjects and who's responsible.
Yeah, it will be interesting, and for those that are listening live and have listened to the show on a semi-regular basis, either live or through the podcast, you'll know who Blink is. And I guess one thing that I've been neglectful with Blink is getting you to explain your webpage a little bit, because we're covering these cases and talking about things that we don't see or hear about on the cable shows or mainstream media, at least not very much. But what you and I and Red does over in class over at Scared Monkeys is we talk about some of the stories that just don't get the airtime that on the mainstream. Just because you don't see it on Nancy Grace doesn't mean that there isn't an important story. So let's spend a few minutes talking about just what you do.
Sure, and I appreciate that, Dana. It's interesting that you asked me that because Red and I actually had a conversation about this the other day. And one of the, I'm not a cherry picker. As a matter of fact, I tend to shy away from a case that I know is being covered heavily and will get the exposure that it needs.
Yep.
And or if it looks fairly complete to me. And that's just not reality for folks that don't have any other avenue. Like you said, I didn't learn about Chris George's disappearance until Tracy Ocasio disappeared. And even then, this individual had so little coverage. I mean, this is a son. This is the boyfriend of someone. This is a family member. He's a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, was murdered by, not nice people that are still, to quote Chris's mom, Rachel, that even if you didn't feel that he was necessarily important to society, if that's your perception, you should be scared that you're probably sharing the sidewalk with somebody that took him out.
Right.
And that should scare you. So for us, I don't know if begrudgingly is the way to put it, but not necessarily from a readership perspective or a public interest perspective, but we tend to, when I personally, develop the team to investigate a case and write on it, what I'm looking for is impact. In other words, is there resources or assets that I have and that I can apply that will make a difference in that case? And most of the time, of course, that's either finding the individual or finding out what happened to them and assisting, the ongoing investigative process with law enforcement. It didn't start out that way, Dana, but
no.
it ended up, going that route fairly quickly. So you're not going to find a lot of, mainstream cases that either we don't have kind of a foundation for or that we expect to have an impact in.
And I was just about to say that. That's not how you began, but it's what this has evolved into, if I can use that term. And the people that are out there, what's the first thing that you go to when you want to learn about something on the Internet? Well, you go to Google.
Well, it depends. It depends on the, what I'll call the high-touch nature of the case. In the case of, as you recall, a huge success for us, in the Christine Shetty case,
yes.
I mean, nobody knew about it. It wasn't covered. There was complete and utter animosity towards the fact that this young woman was even a victim in a jurisdiction that it was. And, I mean, if talk about getting your feet wet on a case,
yeah.
on a fully investigative case. It was a nightmare. What we looked for was, across the board, people that have information and or that are witnesses, developing a network from either the friends, family, witnesses, etc., that I felt I could build, a foundational basis for going outward. Part of that is intuitive. In other words, I think we have a solid team that we can do an initial gloss over of a case and get a feel for how it's going to turn out. An example, which sadly is a bad example, but an example where I didn't feel that I could add much impact would be the Brittany Darksville case.
Sure, yeah.
I just did not. I knew I had certain factual information about that case that discounted what I would have considered previously persons of interest. And I knew, just from some of the physical evidence and some of the circumstantial evidence, we were not going to be able to shed any light on that case. That's going to be a perpetrator that attempts this again before anybody is even going to have a clue, sadly. So from that perspective, I try to make sure that we can understand or at least have something to work with. But Chris's case was very similar to Christine Shetty's in that, the point you bring up is valid. There was no information.
Yeah.
We've developed everything that there was, other than what you read, which was not a lot, in the news. It's been developed by my team with interviews with family, friends, witnesses, and then, kind of like the spider web that goes out from that. And the same with the Ocasio case. You know, you have two families that have come to us and said, you know, can you help? So for me, that's the starting point. You know, finding out if we can help. And if I don't think we can, I'm going to be very upfront about that. I'm not about giving false hope. But I can say that I'll try, and we do, and hope that we're successful. In this case, in the cases of Chris George and Tracy Ocasio, I'm confident that we will be able to lend a hand investigatively, and that's probably, you know, what I would consider, you know, conservative.
And you know that the next day, again, if you're just tuning in, blink from Blink on Crimes here for about another 5 minutes, the next day or the day after that, there'll be another story that will come up. And again, I don't want those listeners or those that pick up the show later to be mad at me when I say I don't want to see any Natalie Holloway coverage. Of course I do, and of course I want to hear that it's her that has been discovered, or some evidence has come forward, something positive for the family. But again, and Red says it best, you're able to walk and chew gum at the same time, so am I, so is he. And it doesn't seem like the cable channels are able to do that. But Blink, you know that tomorrow or the next day there'll be another case. How does Blink decide what she's going to cover?
That's an excellent question. I think that I certainly try to decide if when I'm covering something. And I'm going to give you a reverse example.
Okay.
To complicate things. There's things I don't cover, and I'll tell you why. If I don't feel that I can personally impart a message or a moral or a investigative analysis that I think progresses knowledge or news, in that case, an example would be the Pettit case. I couldn't cover that if I tried. I saw the video of the mother at the bank withdrawing that money,
yep.
And I was in tears for a day. There was just nothing. That's such a heinous act. There was nothing I was going to be able to give other than, you know, kind of blubbering on my keyboard. That's self-serving, and that's not what I do. So when I look at deciding covering something, and it's funny you mentioned, Red and I talk about this sometimes, I don't probably turn articles on my site as often as some would like, or update some things as much as I would like, but I really value the readership. I really value the fact that people take the opportunity to care about what we cover. Because, you know, let's face it, this economy, you know, our family life, our jobs, our this and that, I look at the fact that people care about true crime in these cases as a gift. You know, they're willing to care about somebody else, and I want to promote that. I want to pay that forward. So that's how I decide, I guess, would be the best way, because I don't always have a good answer for that, Dana. Sometimes it's just I kind of feel like cases pick us.
Yeah.
For reasons I'm not always sure about, but in general, it's because they need it.
That's a good way of putting that. Cases do pick us, and it's because we care, and I think it's just that important.
It is, and I think that, as I said, you know, with what you do, with what I do, with what Scared Monkeys does, I think we take that into consideration, because the fact that somebody cares out there is going to hopefully promote action in one way or another. I couldn't imagine doing this for the amount of hours in a day, the effort that it takes, if I didn't think it had an effect somewhere to someone. What would be the point?
Yeah.
You know? So at the end of the day, if it's, I can't say, you know, with regard to the Ocasio in the George case that we're talking about, because we're looking at promoting a series, really, and some heavy investigative work. If I didn't think at the end of the day that there was going to be, you know, a success of sorts, it would just not be, I wouldn't burden anybody else with the waste of time, nor would I burden our own staff. It's important. You know, the way that a family member or someone that you love leaves you, especially if it's at the hand of someone else, it matters. I mean, it certainly, it lays the groundwork for the rest of your life and the way you, you know, live your life. And if that's not really fair, then we need to figure out how to do something about it.
You're right. Blink from blinkoncrime.com, as always, thank you.
Thank you. Be well, Dana.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Yep, bye.
That's Blink from Blink on Crime. That's it. That's tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed it. If you didn't hear it all, or you want to pick up the podcast or podcasts from the last few years, you can go to the webpage at Scared Monkeys, www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. Let's keep our fingers crossed. Let's hope they can bring Natalie home. Stay tuned to scaredmonkeys.com for breaking developments in the case. They'll be posted as soon as we know them. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you again real soon.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.